Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
Merry Christmas. I'm Greg Meyer, and just glad to be with all of you today. I think Christmas is a time that we get a chance to kind of remember who and why we are. And that's sort of what we want to do. We want to give you a little chance to reflect on that in a way that is meaningful to you, but also a chance to just kind of celebrate this season, which is also a pretty special thing for us to be able to do. And I want you to know, especially if you are new to Jacob's Well, that this is not a doubt-free zone, okay? Doubts are welcome here. We probably would say we like to be shame-free, obligation-free, certainty-free, but not doubts. I think we invite you to bring your questions, to bring your commitments, and to bring all of yourself to this community, because we hope you value those things, and we think that is really what makes us strong and what actually helps us to have a faith that matters. And so what we do gather around is this commitment that we believe that life is something that needs to be done together, and that there is more to our life and to our world than what our day-to-day eyes maybe happen to see in our routine. So we're doing that, and that's what we're going to be digging into today as well. You know, I think if there is some magic around Christmas, it has to do with the fact that something filled with wonder from the past manages to sneak into our present and change things for us. And I guess that's probably what those gospel writers that tried to capture the story of Jesus in the Bible were trying to tell us. And I think it's something that all of us do over and over again as we reach back into that old, old story in the past. But we also reach into our childhood. Or if you're kids, you're making those memories right now. But we reach into our childhood. And we also reach back into other Christmases that we celebrated in which we developed memories and we made meaning. And somehow it helps us understand what that old story is about still today and how it comes alive. Because I think, you know, when we do that, well, we enjoy it immensely, which is a good thing. But also, if we're not careful, that Christmas story that was old and is still new messes with us a little bit. Kind of like Scrooge figured out, right? And if we're not careful, it actually changes who we are. It makes us a little more human. And all of us can use a little bit of that. We can all use sort of the wonder of that baby born in Bethlehem long ago, colliding, coming into our lives today, and helping us understand not how or why that story was true or not true back then, not get stuck back there to figure out what it means that this God would be real and present with us today. So as I have said, people have been doing this forever. People have been looking back at the old, old story and trying to understand what it meant for them today and creating new stories of meaning about it. And what we want to do is celebrate one of those and share it with you today. So what we would like to do is help us see how this all pulls together through the story that was written by Jim Aylesworth called My Grandfather's Coat. So enjoy this.
My Grandfather's Coat. My grandfather came to America when he was very young. He came alone and with little more than nothing at all. The years passed, and my grandfather became a tailor. Every day he worked hard. And then, on the luckiest day of his life, he met my grandmother, and they fell in love. When she agreed to marry him, my grandfather went right to work. And he snipped and he clipped and he stitched and he sewed. And he made for himself a handsome coat. And he wore this oh so very handsome coat on his wedding day. My grandfather loved the coat. He wore it while brewing tea for he and my grandmother on cold winter nights. He wore it while shoveling the deep, deep snowbanks, lining the walk from their mailbox to the big red oak door. He wore it while he helped to clean out the chicken coop, the shed that leans a little off to the side, and he wore it while dusting the very tip-top shelf in the pantry. He wore it and he wore it, and little bit by little bit, he frayed it and he tore it, until at last, he wore it out. So what did my grandfather do? He went right to work, and he snipped and he clipped, and he stitched and he sewed, and out of the still good cloth of his handsome coat, he made a smart jacket. The years passed, and soon there was a new baby filling the house with soft coos and loud wails. My grandfather loved his new little girl with his whole heart. And he also loved his new jacket. This new bundle brought about a whole new set of chores and activities in my grandfather's home. My grandfather buttoned up his jacket and wrapped his scarf around his face, and out he and his little girl would go. Grandfather played tag in the park, and he built hideaway forts. And he sat on the overstuffed porch chair, reading adventure after adventure in his smart jacket. And little bit by little bit, he frayed it and he tore it, until at last, he wore it out. So what did my grandfather do? He went right to work. And he snipped and he clipped and he stitched and he sewed. And out of the still good cloth of his smart jacket, he made a snazzy vest. My grandfather loved the vest. He wore it and he wore it. He wore it while he and his team won the big game at the Labor Day picnic. He wore it to the opening of his new tailor shop. Everyone admired the grand garments he made and always would recognize him by his snazzy vest. He wore it while fixing the car and resting on the couch after a long day's work. He wore it to big fancy occasions. And he wore it on quiet fishing trips with my grandmother. He wore it and he wore it, and little bit by little bit, he frayed it and he tore it, until at last, he wore it out. So what did my grandfather do? He went right to work, and he snipped and he clipped, and he stitched and he sewed, and out of the still good cloth of that snazzy vest, he made a stylish tie that he wore on my mother's wedding day. My grandfather loved the tie. Now, there was a new busyness to his days. But no matter what he did, my grandfather wore the tie that had been the snazzy vest and the smart jacket and the handsome gray coat wherever he went. Through the years, there were moving days and rainy days. There were trike days and bike days, graduation days, and even my own wedding day. And all along, my grandfather and his stylish tie were a fixture by my side. And little bit by little bit, he frayed it and he tore it until at last he wore it out. So what did my grandfather do? He sat right down and he snipped and he clipped and he stitched and he sewed. And out of the still good cloth of his stylish tie, he made a toy for you and your kittens. You and your kittens loved the toy. You played with it and played with it and played with it and played with it. And little bit by little bit, you tore it and you frayed it until at last you wore it out. "It's okay," said my grandfather. "Nothing has been wasted." And while my grandfather tucked you in, although quite tattered and torn, what remained of your kitten's tattered toy that was once a stylish tie and a snazzy vest and a smart jacket and a handsome coat was left lying on the floor. And late, 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 when all were soundly sleeping, a mother mouse came creeping, 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 and she found it there. "Why, just the thing to make a nest," thought Mother Mouse. And she pulled it and pulled it across the floor. And there in her little house behind the walls, she tore the threads apart. And she puffed them and she fluffed them. And out of those last bits of tattered cloth, she made a cozy nest. And there she tucked in her small, sweet baby mouse. Then, as Mama Mouse and her baby scampered away to find bits of seed and dried fruit to eat, the threads that once puffed and fluffed slowly moldered and moldered away. No, nothing left of the cozy nest, nothing left of the kitten's toy, nothing left of the stylish tie or snazzy vest, and nothing left of the smart jacket, nothing left at all of your great-grandfather's handsome coat. Nothing left to snip or clip or stitch or sew. No, there was nothing left at all. Nothing, that is, except for this story.
Great story, huh? I mean, so nice, so simple. Unfortunately, it has nothing to do with Christmas. I mean, you know, there is no tree, no presents, no mysterious strangers, no angels. I mean, you know, it doesn't really qualify as a Christmas story at all, does it? Just this old guy kind of, you know, turning out to be a tailor. Okay, so seriously, I mean, this is sort of the ultimate Christmas story. If you don't see how this is a Christmas story, it's not because the story of my grandfather's coat isn't clear, because it's pretty simple and straightforward what its point is. I think the problem would be that we don't understand what Christmas is all about. I mean, Christmas is really digging right into those things. Christmas may be set at a time with, in Bethlehem at a stable, with sheep and shepherds and donkeys and wise men and stars and angels and Mary and Joseph and Jesus and all that sort of stuff. But what it was actually about was something much bigger, something that God was weaving into our world that is still alive and happening today. And when Jesus then was doing that, what Jesus was about with that was not creating a world religion. He wasn't creating an institution that we call a church. Jesus was starting a movement. And that movement could be talked about in a lot of ways, but I kind of like the way my grandfather's coat talks about what that movement's all about. And I would really boil it down to two very, very simple things, and that is actually our Christmas gift to you today. That it's a Christmas gift that we try to live out and have be real among us as a community all year long and in the world around us. And I would say those two things are simply this. One, nothing is useless. And the other is, using something up creates something new. Nothing is useless, and using something up creates something new. Those are on the back of your outline. There's nothing to fill in on the back there, but a couple of thoughts are on the back there if you ever want to take a peek at that as well. So this idea that nothing is useless, I mean, it's true. Nothing is useless. That is one of the huge illusions we have in this world that we live in. We believe it about all sorts of things. We believe that about objects, they get worn out or they get too familiar. We think it's about ideas whose day has come and gone. We think about it and we use it as a way to label other people because, well, it's easier than actually trying to understand them. We can just have them be useless, right? And I'm afraid it's something that we say about ourselves and feel about ourselves a lot of the time. And it's not true. Being useful or being useless is all about value. And value is a very, very tricky thing. Because it all has all to do on from the frame of reference from which you're looking. I play cards. I think about when you're playing a game and you get dealt a hand. You get some hands and you say, this is a really, really good hand. But you don't really know until it gets all played out. It's in the playing of the game that you find out the value of what you were dealt. And you really never know just how important and how useful what you have is going to be until that hand is played out. We'd never really understand the whole picture from any one vantage point. Value is a tricky thing like that. The fact is, there is nothing is useless. If there is a universal truth in that first chapter of the Bible, okay, Genesis chapter 1, where the story of creation takes place, creation in 6 days, you probably have heard the story. If there's a universal truth in there, it is not about the science or the history of how it tells that story, because that's not what the story is trying to tell us. If there's a universal truth packed in there, it is what the story has God saying at the end of every day. You might remember, God looks at all that was created, and God says, nothing is useless. Well, okay, not exactly. I mean, in the Hebrew, it says God is saying it is good. But think about that. If all is good, if everything has its place, everything has a role to play, if everything is important, isn't God looking at all that is created and saying nothing is useless? That is a point that the Bible hammers into us in story after story from the beginning to the end of it. I mean, just think of all the stories. David, the youngest of all the sons of Benjamin, the littlest, the least experienced, the weakest of all of them, he is the one who's selected to be king of Israel. Or think about Jesus and his saying, you know, all those wildflowers growing in the ditch along the side of the road? God thinks those are amazing. What about all those sparrows that are just annoying to you, you know, filling up your backyard? God thinks every one of those is so valuable and cares about each and every one of those. Just think how much God cares and values who you are, no matter who you think you are. And then there's Jesus' entourage, those people that he hung out with all the time. I mean, fishermen, tax collectors, lepers, prostitutes, the scum of society. I mean, it wasn't like Jesus couldn't shake them, they just kept following him. He was collecting these people as if they were actually worth something. And they must have been because he changed the world with them. And then there always is that little detail, you know, that when God decided to truly connect with us and be with us, God decided to do it through a little baby that only had a half a chance of ever making it in a sketchy situation in an obscure village, born to some parents who were probably never going to add up to anything. And it is that way that God said, I am going to be with you. Nothing is useless. Over and over again, grandfather, he wore it and he wore it, and little bit by little bit, he frayed it and he tore it until at last he wore it out. But in the grandfather's eyes, it was never useless. In fact, one of the things I really love about that story is sort of the grandfather's casual disregard of the loss of whatever it last was. You know, the coat to the jacket to the vest to the tie to the cat toy to the nest in the wall for the mice. I mean, it's almost like it didn't matter because, why? Because he never saw it as useless. He always saw it in terms of what would be next. And so, rather than wasting time worrying about what he lost, he snipped and he clipped and he stitched and he sewed until out of the still good cloth, he made something new, which is the second point. By using something up, we create something new. Using something up creates something new, which is another one of those deadly myths that we have in our society, that things just wear out, that we carry this idea that to keep things, we have to have them. And that creates us, when we buy into that, we start living in this world of scarcity where the only way to have things is to have them to ourselves with our fists clenched and to say it's mine. It's deadly because it tells us to live in this world of scarcity where we all turn inward to ourselves and it isolates us and it reduces us to something that is just a mere shadow of what we could be because there are no ripples leading out from our lives anymore. They just go in and they stop and they die there. You know, there's a reason, I think, why the word miser, which is, you know, to keep things for oneself, that is the root of the word miserable. The truth is that the number of things that we lose by using them is dwarfed in comparison to the number of things that multiply when we use them. We need to be the kind of people who believe that. I mean, you can keep that handsome coat in the closet where it's not going to get worn out, it's going to stay in great condition, but who's ever going to see it? And who's going to benefit from wearing it? Or, maybe a little closer to home for some of us, you can keep that beautiful china in the cupboard and don't take it out, you know, unless the Queen of England comes to dinner at your house, because it might get chipped or broken. But why do you have it exactly? I mean, who is it benefiting? Who's enjoying that china? Using something, even using something up, is what makes it valuable. It is in the using, even using something up, that we find it to be wonderful to us. It is in the using, it's in the sharing that we create so much more than we do in the having. We create memories. We create connections, we create understanding, we create opportunities, a future for other people through doing it. And when that has begun to happen, who knows where it's going to stop? It goes beyond us, it's out of our control. And I think Christmas, this time when we talk and think about God being with us, it has so many messages, but one of them that we need to make sure we catch is this idea that God was willing to be like God, like grandfather's coat, and to be used up for us. He came not to stay at a safe distance, to have some, you know, divine distance between us and our messiness, but was willing just to dive in there and to spend God's self for us. And out of it, well, the world got changed, and it's still happening. Life happens. So Christmas asks you and me to look not at what we lose by using, but at what we make by using. Without guarantees, without any, well, certainly if I do this, then that will happen. We don't get that, I'm sorry. But we are the people who are made to give of ourselves, to literally, to spend ourselves, and to trust that that is what life is actually all about. And then while we're doing it, to keep scissors and a needle and a thread handy for what might happen to come next. So it is Christmas, and it's a good thing to hear that old, old story, those words. Because like I said at the beginning, it isn't so that we just remember them and we don't want to make sure we lose them, but so that they can inform and help us embrace the today that each of us has going on for us and in us and through us. And so I invite you all to hear these Christmas stories that were written long, long ago. Matthew and Luke and John all did it in the Bible. And I would also like to refresh those words with a refrain from our story that you were all helping us tell a little bit ago from my grandfather's coat. Except this time I want to make a little shift in how we tell that story. You may remember he snipped and he clipped and he stitched and he sewed, right? But let's not have it be about grandfather. Let's have it be about us, because we are the ones who carry this out today. So instead, you'll hear one of the narrators read the lines, "So we went right back to work," and then your line will be, and it'll be up there on the screen for you to remember, "And we snipped, and we clipped, and we stitched, and we sewed." Okay? I think we can do this together.
Now the birth of Jesus, the Messiah, took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been engaged to Joseph, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. Her husband Joseph, being a righteous man and unwilling to expose her to public disgrace, planned to dismiss her quietly. But just when he had resolved to do this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins."
So we went right to work.
We snipped, and we clipped, and we stitched, and we sewed.
And out of that still good cloth, we made
an announcement. In those days, a decree went out from Emperor Augustus that all the world should be registered. And all went to their own towns. Joseph also went from the town of Nazareth in Galilee to Judea, to the city of David called Bethlehem, because he was descended from the house and the family of David. He went to be registered with Mary, to whom he was engaged and who was expecting a child.
While they were there, the time came for her to deliver her child. And she gave birth to her firstborn son and wrapped him in bands of cloth and laid him in a manger, because there was no place for them in the inn.
So we went right to work.
We snipped and we clipped and we stitched and we sewed
until out of the still good cloth we made
a surprise to the shepherds living in the fields, keeping watch over their flocks by night. Then an angel of the Lord stood before them, and the glory of the Lord shone all around them, and they were terrified. But the angel said to them, "Do not be afraid, for see, I am bringing good news of great joy for all the people. To you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, who is the Messiah, the Lord. This will be a sign for you. You will find a child wrapped in bands of cloth and lying in a manger."
So we went right to work. We snipped and we clipped and we stitched and we sewed until out of the still good cloth we made
an even bigger surprise, as suddenly there was with the angel a multitude of the heavenly host, praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace among those whom he favors." When the angels had left them and gone into heaven, the shepherds said to one another, "Let us go now to Bethlehem and see this thing that has taken place, which the Lord has made known to us."
So they went with haste, and they found Mary and Joseph and the child lying in the manger. When they saw this, they made known what had been told to them about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds told them. But Mary treasured all these words and pondered them in her heart. The shepherds returned, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen, as it had been told to them.
So we went right to work.
We snipped and we clipped and we stitched and we sewed.
Until out of the still good cloth we made
a most unlikely encounter. For in the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all of Jerusalem with him, calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people. He inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet."
"And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means the least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel."
So we went right to work.
we snipped and we clipped and we stitched and we sewed.
And out of that still good cloth we made
a discovery. For the wise men had heard the king, and they set out. And there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and they paid him homage. Then opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
And so we went right to work. We snipped and we clipped and we stitched and we sewed until out of that still good cloth we made
a story. In the beginning was the story. And the story was with God. And the story was God. The story was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through it. And without it, not one thing came into being. What has come into being in it was life. And the life was the light of all people. And the story became flesh and lived among us. And we have seen its glory, full of grace and truth.
No, nothing left of the cozy nest. Nothing left of the kitten's toy. Nothing left of the stylish tie. Nothing left of the snazzy vest. And nothing left of the smart jacket. And nothing left at all of your great-grandfather's handsome coat. Nothing left to snip or clip or stitch or sew. No, there was nothing left at all. Nothing, that is, except this story.
When all is spent and nothing is left, or so it seems, there is still the story. That grandfather's coat by itself would have meant nothing to us if he'd had that coat and worn it nicely and proudly, and when it was all worn out, he would have just gradually kind of forgotten about it and not worn it anymore. But because it was never useless, and it was turned into a jacket, into a vest, into a tie, into a toy, into a nest, into nothing, and turned into a story, that story still lives. And it did something among us today that would never have happened if it hadn't been used up. That passage from John that Chris read at the end, you may have said, I caught what you did there. It isn't in the beginning was the story. It's in the beginning was the word. Well, if you know your Greek, which I know you all do, but just a reminder, that word logos could be translated just as easily as story as it is word. In the beginning was the story. That is another way to say it. Jesus was given. He was worn out. He was spent for us, and he is the story that is with us yet and that changes our world yet. And all that said, it is up to you and me today to snip and to clip and to stitch and to sew and to make that which will be new out of that which we maybe thought before was useless.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.